Hi there, this is Catherine. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Digital Marketing Victories podcast. Before we get into this month's episode, I just want to share with you the ways that you can support the podcast if you're finding the episodes helpful. You can send me a donation at buymeacoffee.com/DMVpodcast. Any and all level of donation would be very much appreciated. Help me offset the cost of producing the podcast. I'd also encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter so that you don't miss a future episode or any other news about the podcast. And to do that, you go to wostrategies.com/newsletter. Okay, on with our episode.
Welcome to the Digital Marketing Victories podcast, a podcast about the realities of digital marketing. Listen in each month to learn about the tactics and strategies, soft skills, and technical requirements that go into digital marketing success. I'm Catherine Watsier-Ong, owner of WO Strategies LLC, an organic traffic consultancy.
And I'm Jim Keeney, owner of Federal Web Consulting and founder of DAP, the platform for the engagement economy. Welcome. Let's get into it and celebrate our victories.
I think you'll like our next guest, Christina Del Villar. So Christina is a Silicon Valley marketing executive, consultant, author, and she's helped companies like Udacity transform, grow, scale, and leverage technology. She's got 25 years of experience at various Fortune 100 companies, more than 10 startups, and she's written a book called The Grit Marketing Method. So during this episode, she talks a bit about the book. She also spends some time talking about how to develop empathy for your coworkers, especially during a pandemic, to become a more successful marketer. And she gives some tips about how to actually do that during our time of social distancing and Zoom meetings. So without further ado, here's our interview with Christina Del Villar.
Christina, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and your marketing background? And how did you find digital marketing? What was your journey?
Excellent. Yeah. So I was lucky enough to started my career in Silicon Valley, where I worked both with large Fortune 500 companies like Oracle and Autodesk, as well as many, many startups, some of which have gone public. Elon Musk's first startup, I worked with him for a long time, which was exciting. And so I've just had this really unique journey being in Silicon Valley, where technology is being created. So not only am I marketing or have I marketed for these startups and these technology companies, I've also really followed closely the technology that's been coming out, whether that's for the financial industry, or whether it's for marketing itself. For example, I was actually one of the alpha and beta testers for Marketo when it first came out, which was exciting for me as a marketing person to sort of see the evolution of what could be. Working at Oracle was great because we had access to so much data as well. And again, just some of those experiences really helped me understand the importance and significance of technology and the data that comes along with that. So I've been really lucky with that journey. And then just, digital marketing itself, just the evolution. I think that in order to be successful in marketing, you need to continually be learning and looking at what is out there. What are the changes? Is Clubhouse the next new thing? Is TikTok, are we already over TikTok? Who knows, right? My space is definitely gone. But closed that account last year. No. But it really is important to understand the technology that's out there and how you as a marketing professional can leverage it. And again, just been really lucky to be in the middle of that space. That's allowed me to really sort of gain the knowledge that I needed. I'm a very technical person as well, which is unique for a marketing person. I really do understand the technology. And so from that standpoint, it's also allowed me to work more closely with engineers and product teams, which has really helped my career as well.
Yeah, I have to admit that I got involved in the internet in 1994. And so sometimes I pull out that card when I try to build relationships with developers.
Yeah, yeah.
HTML mine, and Pico, baby.
Seriously, mine was at Stanford back in 1987. So I had to code. Wow. I had to, basically code HTML to communicate with the government who were the ones who were funding our programs. So yeah, back in the day, you know, I was like, this World Wide Web thing is going to be amazing. So yeah. And actually, ironically, I tried to convince my dad, this is early on when it was about $10,000 to buy a URL. And I asked to borrow $20,000 from my dad so I could buy Oreo.com and Coke.com. And he thought I was insane.
Now what did you say?
I'm like, I think it's going to be big. But we've definitely, you know, we've definitely progressed from that standpoint as well.
So you have written a book that's about to come out. Can you tell me a little bit more? It's called Sway, Implementing the Grit Marketing Method. So tell me a little bit more about the book and how you think it's going to help marketers.
Yeah, so I actually wrote the book specifically for marketing professionals to help them not only do their job better and more effectively, but to be able to build influence and trust and really be able to show their value, add, and impact. You know, it's one thing to be able to create amazing programs and campaigns. It's another thing to help the company as a whole understand the significance of those programs and campaigns and what you and your team are bringing to the table. And I think that that's just been missing for a really long time. I think that marketing often, you know, is sort of seen as non-essential, if you will. It's hard for us to show our impact. And I feel that because we're so passionate about our jobs, we just sort of like put that aside. Like, that's okay. I know I'm doing a good job. I know this campaign is going to be successful. I know it's going to help the company. If I'm the only one that knows that, that's okay. I'm going to keep going because it's such an amazing, you know, program that I have. But I think that has really led to marketing professionals being sort of ineffective in their own growth, their own career trajectory, because they haven't been able to show that impact. And so that's why I wanted to write the book. It really is a framework. It's something that I've been doing for literally decades with my teams and just sort of didn't think about it in terms of a framework or a foundation or how others could actually put this into practice. And, you know, sort of the steps that you would need to do that. So, you know, it took some time and really sort of thought about what this methodology looks like and how others could take it and easily implement it. And again, while it's for marketing professionals, others can easily use it, but it really is pretty specific to marketing professionals. And again, it's not a book about how to market. It's a book about how to market yourself. You know, market the marketer. It's kind of like, what do they say about the cobbler's shoes, that kind of thing. You know, we need to spend the time to market ourselves internally so that we can have more influence, you know, be more recognized, be able to showcase what we're doing, and therefore get the resources we need to sort of continue on with the programs and the trajectory we're looking at.
Yeah, I cannot wait to read this book because personally, I've struggled with that. I totally was let go of the job because I wasn't selling up, basically. Yeah. I knew I was doing great stuff, but marketing internally was something I was not doing.
It's really hard to do. And that's why, because you're so, like, I'm sure you and others who are listening, you're so focused on your programs and making sure that they're being executed properly. The thing that really fascinates me is, you know, we've seen this with the pandemic, but just I'm sure over our career, as long as it's spanned, you know, marketing is often the first budget to get cut, and we're often the first people to get laid off. When in fact, the company itself can't function without marketing, and they'll lose momentum. And it's really hard to get that momentum back for companies, and they struggle to do that. And so my initial thought was I would write a book for C-suite and help them understand what marketing does and what we bring to the table, the impact we have. And I realized that was just, people have tried that before and it wasn't working. So my goal was to help marketing professionals sort of build that themselves and help, you know, first their managers and then other leaders within the organization and their cohorts and their colleagues in other departments in their company, really help them understand what they're doing and how it's helping the company overall.
Yeah, amazing. Can you tell me? Yeah, I'm totally fascinated. So can you tell me a little bit more? I'm a little bit stuck right now on the grit. So what does the grit mean? Does it stand for anything?
Yeah.
How do people use it?
So for me, I feel like marketing professionals have grit. If they don't, they're probably not going to last long in marketing. They have to have that passion. They have to have that perseverance. which is what grit means to me. And so when I was coming up with this methodology there, it's a four-step process that I take people through and was able to sort of form it into the acronym GRIT. So GRIT basically stands for, the G stands for go-to-market strategy, which I think is critical. I feel like marketing professionals and marketing departments and marketing teams are brought into the process after the strategy has already been developed. Part of that is because you've built your company based on a product. So you have your product and now you need to take it to market, which I understand that. But at some point you need to think about, you know, marketing can really help guide not only the go-to-market strategy, but the product itself, the features and the functionality. And so the G really stands for go-to-market strategy and how marketing can become more involved in that. And that gets expanded into looking at the entire customer journey from product to marketing, which, you know, is the area that we already own, to how we can help sales and how we can even help customer support and customer success, keep customers, reduce churn, and expand on the customer base that you've already basically paid for to have. So that's really what that focuses on. And the key components for that is what I call touch points. So if you're looking at your entire customer journey, what are the areas that marketing either is already touching, and might not even recognize that they are touching that, or areas that marketing should be touching or be more involved in. So for example, with product, if product is building out the roadmap, marketing has a lot of data and information about what customers are looking for, what prospects are looking for. Like, we can tell based on the types of shows that are out there, we can tell based on the types of podcasts that are out there, what our prospects and customers are looking for. So we can help product define products better just by giving them that kind of information. So all those little things that we probably don't think about that we can actually have that impact on. And I think the other key thing to think about is once you recognize those touch points, if you align it back to your go-to-market strategy, then that's really powerful and meaningful. So if you're thinking about it from customer success standpoint, and churn is a huge issue that your company is having, you're losing revenue, you're losing big logos, what can you do, or what is marketing already doing that can help keep your customers? You know, is it doing webinars? Is it doing, you know, product webinars, or is it taking a webinar that you've already done and chunking it up into like 1 minute training sessions for customers? And these are things that, again, marketing is already doing, but they're not necessarily doing it thoughtfully and mindfully with intention, so that it can be more strategic and be more aligned with the overall go-to-market strategy. So that's the G. That's a big one.
We've got to the first one.
I know, we got to the first. Oh, we're out of time. Sorry. The R stands for RPM, which is repeatable, predictable, and measurable. And this goes again to all the different things that marketing is already doing, but doing it just a little bit more thoughtfully. So if you are from a repeatable standpoint, what have you already created that you can either reuse or repurpose? Because that's really what you want to do. If you build what I call your pillar piece, then how can you chunk it up? How can you use it differently? Can you do one webinar that covers your entire go-to-market strategy and then, you know, build out 10 different blogs from that and then turn that into an e-guide and then turn that into 100 different social media posts, right? It's just thinking a lot smarter about how you're leveraging your content and your programs so that you can basically extend them. And then basically what you want to be able to do is measure them, right? That's kind of a key thing. And so that you have that predictability. So that's what the R stands for in GRIT, the repeatable, predictable, and measurable. The I stands for, the I stands for intention. And that kind of goes back to what we're saying, like, be purposeful about your programs. I'm sure you guys and your audience can relate. How many times a day are you interrupted with little requests that, you know, might only take a minute or 5 minutes of your time, but it is really interrupting your productivity, and it may not align with the go-to-market strategy, and it may not be critical. So, you know, for example, a salesperson, they can't find the slide deck, right? And so you have to stop what you're doing and go, you know, get them a slide deck for a presentation that they have. There's literally, I get interrupted, I don't even know, tens, dozens of times a day, hundreds of times a week. And that really does impact your productivity. And so you really need to be mindful and intentional about what it is that you're doing, how you're spending your time, how you're spending your resources. So that's the I in GRIT. And the T really stands for the tools and technology that we need, the systems, everything that we need to help define our programs, help implement our programs, and then help measure them. So it could be your CRM or your marketing automation tool, or it could even be things like your website or your chat program on your website. So that's what GRIT stands for. And really, it does kind of take people through, the book will take people through the entire process of recognizing what all of those are, how to implement them, how to measure, and then also how to articulate your results to your different audiences.
Awesome.
that's fantastic. And so the thing that I'm wondering is, I'm sure when you get customers or when you've come on to new companies, it's a chaotic mess. So can you talk about the way that you wrangle, hurdle that, and how you begin to get to the point where GRIT is actually effective?
It's a great question. And some of it's just learnings over the years. I've definitely made some mistakes. I think there's a couple of times when I've gone into companies and made some assumptions based on sort of interview process and, what I was hired to do. So for example, when I started working at Udacity, my job was to build the go-to-market strategy where they were going from a B2C model or a direct-to-consumer model to a B2B model, right? They recognized that selling online courses in large mass to Fortune 500 companies is a much more effective way of getting the courses out there. I literally had asked when I was talking to them, like, is this the corporate strategy and is everybody bought into it? And yes, absolutely, B2B, that's what we want to do. So when I got there, what I recognized pretty early on was that the folks who had focused on and had built the company around this direct consumer were like, not going to happen. We are not, we are not about selling to corporations. We're about helping individuals. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's different. Because then what I needed to do was help these folks understand how I was going to make their courses successful and individuals successful, even though it might have been through corporate sales or a B2B strategy. And so part of it is, again, goes back to the go-to-market strategy. What is the strategy? What is the overall corporate strategy? What's the culture? Is everybody bought into this so that I can come in then and help guide based on what already exists? And if we're making large changes, because normally I'm coming in to sort of help pivot an organization. And so I really need to understand sort of, what's going on and how to get people to where we need to be. And again, sometimes I've gone in and have made assumptions that everybody is on board with this. Everybody's on board with the change and they're not. And so I need to step back and sort of really evaluate, what is motivating people and how I can help them, through that. And I think that the big thing really is, and I think ironically with the pandemic, it's come out more often. And that is just having empathy for people, really understanding where people are coming from, why they're in the role that they're in, why they're at the company they're at, what it is that is going to help make them successful. And then taking that and putting things in context for them when you're talking to them, whether you're talking to them about a marketing program or you're talking to them about results or things you need from them. If you understand where they're coming from, have that empathy and can share things in context with them, it's just much easier for them to buy into it and then to buy into, whatever program or strategy I'm trying to implement.
That's the same kind of core competency required for understanding customers as well.
Oh, excellent point. Yeah. Yeah.
And you've done a lot of work with startups because one of the things that I keep running into over and over again, and Kathleen Booth, who was on our first
podcast,
she talked about this as well, which is when you first come into a startup, they're like, any dime from any location, I'll do anything. But they don't have that intention. And without that intention, their marketing is 1,000 miles wide. And
oh my gosh. Yeah, you're trying to boil the ocean. At one point I started with a company, they had basically gotten rid of all of their marketing team and had brought me in. And I was, again, trying to understand like what happened, what went wrong, what worked. And I was talking to them and I was looking out the window and I saw a car that had a wrapper on it for that company. And I was like, what's up with the car? And they were like, yeah, the last marketing manager thought that this would be great. So we bought a car and wrapped it and then drove it around Silicon Valley. And I'm like, but that's not where your audience actually lives. They're like, yeah, it wasn't very effective, but it looked cool. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah. And then, you know, then they were like, yeah, marketing just goes and buys cars. It's like, no, that's not what we do.
go ahead. I once came into an organization where the previous marketer had decided that they needed to have marketing in the voice of a dog or a cat. So I had to take over, and it wasn't Petco.
right. Yeah, it's I am all for innovation, no right. question about it. But again, it goes back to thinking about how does this align with your strategy and what it is, you know, that you're trying to do and your what solution. You know, you have and what customers and what target audience you're looking at. Clearly driving around a car in Silicon Valley for an audience that doesn't live in Silicon Valley is just not going to be as effective. And so, you know, again, knowing your audience obviously is critical. But to that point, knowing your internal audience is also really critical for you to get your job done. I had part in the book, you know, the book goes into this, you know, quite a bit in terms of how do you relay and showcase your results to the different audiences, right? Like, you know, marketing, we're like, we have X million, you know, MQLs and SQLs, and you know, this is what our website traffic is. But other people in the company either don't care or don't understand the significance of that. So you need to talk to them and share the results in meaningful ways to them. Like sales cares about pipeline and revenue. So talk about pipeline and revenue. The executives really only care about revenue. So talk to them about revenue. And just really know, you know, what it is that they're looking for and what's going to be meaningful to them. And that really gets into, again, I think part of the problem that marketers have is they're so excited about their campaigns and, you know, like, oh, we had this great webinar and it brought in 80,000 people, which is amazing. But nobody else in the company understands that 80,000 people attending a webinar is actually really freaking amazing. So you either have to help them understand it or give it to them and help them understand it in a way that's meaningful to them.
So over the years, it seems like you've come in and been a catalyst for change and just being in digital marketing in general. Usually have to pivot people's mind about things. So whether you're like in-house or consulting, if you're consulting, it's like a discovery phase. So have you come up with sort of like, I don't know, a listening session or something? You're brand new to the organization. You're supposed to pivot them. How do you meet people? How do you figure out the landmines? And I ask this because I've had mistakes in my career about this. Curious if you figured it out.
Yeah, it's I've never made a mistake there. No, right. And again, the Udacity is a perfect example. And part of that was just, you know, I made the assumption that people were on board with this. And even though they said they were on board, they really weren't, right? And so you have to recognize that pretty early on. But I think the key thing is to have those interviews with people. First, I think it's really important that you do understand sort of the overall global strategy first, and then go have those conversations with people. And I literally have conversations with everybody. The person who fortunately got the broom closet because there was no more space, and you know, to the folks who are, you know, coding in India, to everybody, because you need them to buy into what it is that you're trying to build, and you need them to be evangelizing it at all levels of the company. And so really, it's just about having those, building those relationships. And I know it sounds, you know, really cliche, but it really is significant. And you need to understand, again, like, what is motivating them. When I was at Autodesk, I had a brown bag. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll do brown bags with specific organizations. I'll do a brown bag with engineering. I'll do a brown bag specifically with product. Because if you, again, it kind of goes to that language. If you have everybody in a room, not everybody's going to understand it. So I have individual brown bags. And I was having this brown bag with engineering. And to be honest, they were told to go. So I had a real lively audience.
Yeah.
And they were all kind of they literally were like a little bit checked out. So basically what I did is I tried to talk to them sort of in a language that they would understand and explain to them why what it was that they were doing was critical and how it actually helped the company, right? The more effective code they wrote, the more efficient, the more happy, the better experience our customers were having, the lower churn we would have, the more revenue we would have. And like, suddenly they were like, wait, what we do impacts revenue? And I'm like, yeah, it actually does. And so then we got into this conversation about that. And then this one guy who I literally thought was like just not paying attention at all, popped his head up from his phone and he goes, you know what? I have 10 years of customer data. Would you like to go through that sometime? Because maybe we can write a white paper about it. And I was like, I'm sorry. Yes, please. 10 years of customer data. And then all of them got all excited about it. They're like, oh my gosh, yeah, we know when customers are going to churn because we know that they get stuck at this one spot and then they just quit and they don't try to go on. I'm like, yeah, that's really important for product to know too, by the way. So having these brown bags and again, kind of trying to put it in context or trying to help them understand how they can help and the impact they're having was really important. So they got all excited about it. And they're like, you know what? We're going to go back. We're going to go look at our data. Now that we know what you're trying to do, how you use data, you know, if you're using it for webinars, if you're using it for infographics, whatever it is, we're going to go back, look at our data and come back to you with some thoughts on some reports that we think would be useful both externally and to our customers. I'm like, yes, amazing. But if I hadn't had that brown bag and, you know, if they hadn't been forced to go, then we wouldn't have gotten there. So I do try to, again, have individual conversations and then do these brown bags with the different teams that are out there. The other thing I'll do with if I am managing a team, I will always take my team and I will assign people in other organizations for them to basically become, you know, besties with, you know, whether it's just like, you know, go out to coffee or again, just have empathy, just, you know, talk to them, understand what's going on. Like, and I will assign them a product person, an engineer, a salesperson, somebody from every department so that they have that insight. And I'm pretty thoughtful about like who I will assign to which folks. And sometimes I'll tell the managers that I'm doing this. I'll tell like the sales managers, by the way, I'm going to pair my team up with folks on your team. Sometimes I don't tell them and just tell my team and they go off and, magically decide they want to become best friends with, you know, the product guy. Right. But what that does is it helps my team then understand, you know, have more empathy when we're looking at building out programs and we need to focus on prioritization. It just gives them a better understanding of what the other person is going through and sort of gives them better talking points so that they can work through what that prioritization might be. And so those are some of the things that I've done that have helped me gain those sort of better working relationships.
So here's the big trick question with our online Zoom world.
Yeah, yeah.
What tip do you have to do this with Zoom fatigue and only distance and only screens and phone and that kind of thing?
You know, I have always had teams that were international. I've had teams that are in different time zones. I had APAC, I had EMEA, India. And so I've always had teams that are in different time zones. So we've always had, certainly telephone conversations, Zoom meetings. And I think that the key thing is not just to have them, but to have an agenda. And again, it kind of goes back to intent and purpose. It's like, I want you on this call because, and these are the things, this is the agenda. This is what we're going to talk about. This is what the outcome is that we hope to get to. And this is why we're doing it. And it seems like a lot of work up front. but it makes everybody come more prepared to the meeting. It helps you get through the meeting more quickly. And then everybody kind of knows what's going on. I'm known for having I'll have a 37 minute meeting. It's like, I don't need an hour. I really only need 37 minutes of your time and we can get through this and we can belt it out pretty fast. And so I just think it's important to not have meetings just to have meetings, which again, if you're talking specifically about, sort of these coffee clutch type meetings that you have, it's a little different on Zoom. But generally I'll have somebody say hey, you know what, I have this idea and I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. And again, don't make it an hour long meeting, just make it 15 minutes, right? And just start building the relationship from that. And then what I've noticed is, you can have Slack and then those folks start having conversations on Slack. But they become a support system for each other. And again, whether it's a Zoom meeting or Slack or just texting, whatever it is, I found that those relationships really help sort of build upon that trust and really help the organization grow or the departments grow together more quickly.
Can you go ahead and relate all that to what you call the marketing map of influence?
That's
the concept here.
What a great segue. So the map of influence is something that, again, I've done. I actually have a physical map of influence when I'm in organizations. And I do. I divide it up between the customer journey, which generally for us is the product phase, the marketing phase, the sales phase, and then the customer phase. And really, again, it goes back to looking at all those different touch points, all the different areas where you're aligning with your go-to-market strategy, all the different things that marketing can influence, whether they're building it themselves or they're just influencing it. And really, again, it's a physical map for me, at least. Some people, can put on post-its or however you want to look at it. But it really is looking at how you can help those different pieces of that customer journey become better and, again, more strategic. So, again, for example, if we're talking about the engineers, right? Those engineers that I talked to in that brown bag, I can help them make a better product by giving them information about our customers. And again, for me at my level in marketing, I have access to that information. Folks who are early on in their career aren't going to have that type of information or be able to influence. So to think about, who you are, what your role is, and the different folks that you work with directly or indirectly, and how you can work with them, even more. Because basically, at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is help them do their job better, because that's only going to make it easier for you to do your job. So it's a little, maybe a little selfish, but at the end of the day, what it really will do is help the overall company be much more effective.
And when you have the map of influence, you're looking at different potential gaps or, do you have, Have you kind of come up with a back of the envelope strategy for which tactics are more effective with the different segments of the map of influence?
Yeah, actually, in the book definitely goes into this. But if you think about the product phase, part of it is, again, you start a company based on a product or a solution, right? So it is very product and solution oriented to begin with, and it is a it's a mindset that you have to help them understand that it now needs to be more of a go-to-market strategy versus a product strategy. And so helping them, again, sort of in context, helping them understand the importance and significance of what they're doing. Because let's face it, they often are sort of in the same situation with where marketing is, where, salespeople are like, oh, this product is terrible and I can't sell it. And, you guys aren't doing anything. You aren't, making the changes to the product that our customers are asking for. So they're also in a situation where they're doing the best they can. And they're often not given credit for the significance of what it is they're doing with the product and the overall corporate revenue. So, how can you help them? Right. I mean, that's really, really what it comes down to. And so for product, and again, it really does just go back to context, like helping them understand, why it's significant, why prioritizing features and functionality is significant, what it means to marketing. For example, I have been in many situations with product where they've built a roadmap that makes sense to them and their engineering time. However, from a marketing perspective, I can get a lot more play with it because there's, like, let's say Dreamforce is coming up. And if I can release it at Dreamforce, then it's just going to do a lot better in the marketplace. So helping them understand why that deadline is critical helps them understand, could they potentially push this feature functionality out and bring some other ones up that might be more critical for a launch at Dreamforce. And the same is true for sales. Like at the end of the day, sales, oh my gosh, those people just get beaten up all the time. They don't have enough, not bringing in enough revenue. They're not closing fast enough. They're, not bringing in big enough deals. So how can marketing help them do a better job at that? How can we enable them better? How can we, make sure that expectations are being set properly? Even if we're doing an event, this happens a lot. And I get it because, again, marketers are in this day in, day out, but not everybody is. But for example, like let's just take Dreamforce, for example. I've been in the situation a couple of times where Dreamforce is going to bring in thousands of leads, but that doesn't mean that they're quality leads, and that doesn't mean that they're ready for sales. So even before you do Dreamforce, you need to help the company or everybody who's going to like see these big numbers coming in, help them understand what that means, right? Like you may end up only getting 100 lead sales. And the executive team needs to understand that as well, because the executive team is like, marketing just did Dreamforce and brought in 2,000 leads. How come you haven't closed anything? And sales is like, well, we only got 10 leads so far, right? And so you need to really help everybody sort of along that chain and that journey understand what these leads mean, when they might convert, how they're going to be nurtured. And again, at the end of the day, what it means in terms of pipeline and what that will ultimately mean in terms of revenue and when, because I know leads from Dreamforce are going to take 12 months at least to close, right? So I'm not looking for revenue the next month. It's great if that happens, but it's not likely. So again, it's about setting expectations and, really just helping people understand what that process looks like.
So well, it circles back to what you talked about in terms of RPM, right? Because you're trying to set up these reproducible streams, yep. right? All the way yep. from yep. lead generation through the conversion funnel to close.
Right.
And you can't do that without sales, but you also yep. can't do that without marketing working very closely with sales. Because, right. If they've got a great funnel, and they're bringing tons of stuff at the top of the funnel, but it has nothing to do with what actually converts or closes a sale, then, then why'd you do it?
Yeah. And I I've been, and again, I think it goes to marketing really understanding what, like you're saying, like to that predictability. Again, I know if I do a webinar, those leads will close in 6 months. If I do an event, they'll close in 12 months. If I do, an executive roundtable, they'll close in 1 month. If I'm targeting specific folks that I know are already on the fence and we, send our CEO to them for lunch, whatever, those are going to close the next day, right? There's just some things that marketing knows that we need to explain to others so that they can be more effective as well. When I was at Bill.com, we did a webinar and it was a really great webinar. It was a thought leader and this webinar really should have done well. We had a ton of interest. We had a ton of folks who registered and attended. And then the SDRs who were making the calls were like, this is the worst webinar. This is the worst program ever. And I was like, really? I'm not sure that that's like, what's happening? and what turned out was that it was literally at the end of summer and people were just basically on vacation. This is when people could go on vacation. So it was a while ago. So I'm like, here's the deal. Give all of these back to marketing. We're going to nurture them for 2 weeks. We're going to send them. We're going to write a paper. We're going to send the paper out. We're going to, do a couple of emails. And we did that. And then after that 2-week period when everybody should have been back and kids are back in school and go back to school. And they called them again. And like literally the next week when we had our meeting, they're like, oh my God, this is the best program ever. And I was like, mm-hmm. So, but again, we didn't set them up for success initially. And part of it was we weren't even thinking about like, you know, the seasonality of it or that people would be on vacation. But once we recognized that and built a program to sort of help mitigate that and nurture them in the meantime, then it was a super successful program. It was like one of the most successful programs we actually had. They were converting like within a day, which was like really phenomenal because we'd taken the time to understand like what was happening. We took the time to build out more, again, taking that content and reusing it, repurposing it, and to kind of build and nurture upon that. And then the sales team was ready to go in and close those deals. But again, sort of part of it is you need to get that feedback. You need to have that feedback loop. And that goes back to, you know, having that influence and having that trust, you know, so that the salespeople can come to you and say, hey, this really sucked and let's figure out why it sucked and what we can do about that. If they just say it sucks and walks out of the room, then.
Not terribly which, many ways to influence
it's there. Not, right. It's like, okay, I can see that, right. So you do need to build that trust and then because you've built that trust and you listen to them and you've worked on a program together to fix it, then they're going to continue to come to you and they're going to come to you with ideas as well, which is really significant. You know, salespeople can be really innovative. You know, like let's do a promotion or, you know, let's focus on this state this month or whatever it is. Because they're, you know, they're on the front lines and they have a really good ear to what's happening with the prospects.
So going back to building that relationship with your team, do you have a bit of prep that you provide your team members, especially maybe the junior ones, about the way you should talk mm-hmm. to these different teams? Because this sounds stereotypical, and I realize not every developer is introverted, because I've had sure. a few that aren't. But, no, but yeah. generally, developers have, most of the time, a distinctly different personality than a gregarious marketer.
Right.
You come in with that personality, you might not be listened to as well.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you have anything that's like that that you prep them on. Like, okay, when you talk to sales, make sure you mention X, Y, and Z and tone yeah. down this or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Don't talk about that. Yeah. Don't bring up cat videos, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a couple things I do. Again, I actually am pretty mindful about who I assign. And so I personally take that into consideration. What I will often do is I will pick people in other organizations who I know are open to, you know, having these conversations and learning. Like for example, if I've had I've had developers come to me, you know, with ideas before, and I'm like, oh, this is great. They understand marketing enough to know that, you know, maybe this is something that we should be looking at. So they're open to ideas, they're open to having conversations. So I will try to find same with sales, right? You have some salespeople who are really open to trying new things and being innovative. And I will often I'll find those folks right away and really set them up for success. And so trying to identify those folks, just that helps in general. And then, you know, I mean, again, like you're saying, I'll have those conversations, you know, not every salesperson wants to hear from marketing. Right. And so I normally have them start the conversations on a more personal level, right? So, you know, figure something out about them. With some of the companies, you know if people are like they're into music, or you know, you see like stickers on their laptop about, you know, a band that they like or something like that, right? So there's ways that you can kind of connect with folks. And so I'll try to have my team focus on that and focus on just building that personal relationship first so that then they can kind of get into, you know, some of the other conversations as they're kind of building that relationship. So those are some of the things that I, you know, try to tell the folks. Plus I also tell my team this is why we need product to understand what it is that we do. This is why I need sales to understand specifically, like if you're the content person, I need you working really closely with product because they have the details of what the product and solution does. And so I'll tell my team, like, these are the things, this is why we need to have that relationship with them and what we can get from them, and so that they're kind of going about it from that perspective as well.
Now, you still, you almost sound like you have a sales background, because some of that stuff is stuff that you would do if you had a one-on-one sales meeting with somebody, you know, the figuring out what their personal interest is, maybe that a little bit before, mirroring the body language, that kind of stuff, you know?
It's a good point. I think it just goes back. I mean, my background is in communication. So, and actually nonverbal communication is one of the areas that I really focused on. So I am very much about, like, you know, looking at people's expressions, like, are they rolling their eyes? Are they just on their phone and totally ignoring you? Are they asleep? which I've had before. But it's really, you know, so for me, it's a little easier to sort of recognize some of those characteristics. And again, I just think, you know, it is so important to understand both your internal audience just as much as your external audience, right? And again, marketing, we're great at that. We're great at understanding our audiences. We just need to sort of shift in terms of, what's going on. If you think about the executives, I tell, you know, folks who are just starting off, like, get to know your company CEO. Like, you know, if you see him jogging, just say, hey, you know what? I just took up jogging. Can I go jogging with you, you know, next Wednesday? Like, just, you know, getting to know them and understanding who they are and their personality is just really, really critical. And the sooner you can understand how to do that, the easier your job, I think, will be. And so really for me, it's just, observation, and, you know, I try to help my teams as much as possible, sort of recognize those little things as well.
Really is about taking the skill set of marketing.
Yep.
Turning it inward as well.
Exactly.
Going back to grit, right? It's not just what is your message and who is your audience, but it's also, can you do it on a reproducible basis? Can you measure it? What's the success? Getting concrete on that way.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it reminds me. So I do a lot of work with startups, and of course, I'm the technical person, by the way. I'm a strong extrovert. So I think the word you were looking for is engineering,
right?
Not introvert, but hey, whatever you want to believe.
I get that.
But, it really is about helping the organization as a whole take the journey away from the product, now that it's
to
the market, into the shoes of the customer, and then return back to the organization from that perspective. Because the way I always describe it with entrepreneurs is, with startups, is they see a problem. They go, oh, I can solve that. They they start building a product. All of their focus now zooms into the product. They forget that the whole reason why they did it is because there was somebody out there who had a need to fill. And so just taking them on that quiet march outside and back in is really powerful. And you're doing the same thing, it seems to me, with your internal kind of mapping of marketing influence. You're helping each one of them connect outside of what they're doing to kind of the greater strategic whole.
Yeah, and it's so true. And again, it's so funny because these are skills that we have as marketing professionals, and yet we sort of don't think about how to apply them. I had when I was working at Intact, we would have this weekly sales call, and it was a monthly sales call. This particular meeting, and we would talk about the previous month, like what marketing did, and you know what we brought in, and then we would talk about the programs we were going to have for the following month. And these meetings were just, they were just painful for everybody. And you could tell, like, within the first 5 minutes that these folks were completely, they just didn't care what we were doing. It meant nothing to them. Clearly we weren't having impact on their jobs or lives or anything. And so I kind of walked away from one meeting thinking, well, that was really weird. And then I had, on my desk, I had all of our leads for the month, like in green, like, oh my gosh, we're almost, you know, we're hitting our MQLs. And I had some sales guy come up, and he literally, he erased the number. And I was like, what? What'd you do that for? And he's like, because you have this number up here and it's huge and it looks great and it's in green. It's like the executives walk by and see this huge lead number. And then they turn around to sales and say, how come you're not selling anything? And I was like, ooh, yeah. I'm like, that number is just for like my marketing team to see like, you know, how many leads we have coming in because it converts at this rate, which converts to this revenue. And he's like, well, they don't see any of that. They just see this big number. And then they come to us and say, how come we haven't closed any sales? So the next month when we had that meeting, I told my team, I'm like, look, they only care about pipeline and revenue. Like what's in it for them? And we've been going into this meeting with our whole funnel. This is what, these are the programs we have. This is how many leads we have. This is our traffic. This is our MQLs. This is our SQLs, right? Like I have the whole funnel laid out for them. And I'm like, flip it, just flip it. Like start with the very last slide, which shows the pipeline and the revenue. And like, and if you never get to any other slides in your presentation, that is okay. So the next meeting we went in, we literally started with the revenue that we brought in and the pipeline that we developed for sales. And suddenly sales is like, oh, this is super interesting. And it got the conversation started. Like, well, you know, what did you do to get to this pipeline? Were there programs that were more effective and impactful than other ones we tried? And can we put more money into those instead? And how can sales help promote those programs more if they're actually converting, you know, and bringing in more qualified leads? And so simply by, again, speaking their language, which is what we do with our external target audiences, it really helped the conversation. And again, just really put everything in context and show that we understood like what they were up against. Like they get asked about revenue and pipeline every day by the CEO. So how can we help them understand, you know, what that looks like and what we're doing to help them with that?
Empathy
and context. Yeah, yep. Really. Yeah. Yep. And it sounds so right.
You actually have crystallized the motivation for us starting this podcast.
Oh, awesome.
When you earlier talked about the fact that marketing professionals, there is nothing equipping them for what they actually do at this point. And how critical a role they play, especially as soon as a company decides that they're going down the road of digital marketing in one form or another, it is absolutely 100% a strategic thing.
I love when you were talking about how you need moxie to be successful. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, it stuck out to me because I grew up in the town where the soda was created named Moxie.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. You're like,
Right, exactly. But can you tell me a little bit more about what do you mean by that? And then more importantly, can you figure out if you have it? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have it,
how do you get it?
Exactly.
It's a great question. Yeah. So my whole thing is about grit and moxie, right? So grit is sort of that perseverance and passion, and moxie really is the determination that you need. And again, I feel like most marketing professionals already have grit and moxie. You need it to like day in, day out, sort of come in, do your job, kind of get beaten down, if you will, which often happens. You know, you have your budget cut, lose your job, lose your team. And again, really not have people understand the impact you're having. And yet you get up the next day and you're like, we're going to keep going because I know this is the right thing to do, right? That really is grit and moxie. And I feel like marketing people already have that. They might not necessarily recognize that they have it or that that's what it is, but that really is what it is. And you need both of those, I think, to succeed. And I think it really goes back to just having that passion about, you know, your job, your role, your company, the programs you're implementing, the campaigns you have, the rest of your team. I mean, you know it, and your listeners know it too. Like you want your company to be successful. You want everybody in the company to be successful, and you want your customers to be successful. And that's really why you're there. If you don't have grit or moxie, I honestly, and this might sound really mean, but I don't think marketing is a good profession for you, because you really need to have both to be successful and to be able to empower yourself. That's one thing I learned early on. You know, for a while I was like, oh, somebody empower me, that would be great. And then I was like, wait, I don't need somebody to empower me. I need to empower myself. And so that's basically what I've done. And I try to teach my teams as well. It's like, nobody's going to empower you. You need to empower yourself. And so I feel like if you might be new to marketing and not really know like where you fit in, and that's okay. But you still need to have that passion in order to sort of get through, you know, it's a career where you kind of need to have a strong backbone, if you will. And so that's kind of where I came up with the grit and Moxie. I have a friend who said he was going to name his kid Grit and then get her a puppy dog named Moxie, and they'd walk around the neighborhood and be Grit and Moxie together. He named her Maya instead, which is fine, whatever. but again, I think it's just things that I think it's, we already have it. It's just a matter of recognizing it. And I think it's important to recognize that in others in marketing, on your marketing team or other companies, and sort of help amplify that for them.
Yeah, I've managed in-house teams that have been younger folks, mostly trained mm-hmm. for college kind of thing. Yeah. And I actually, because I've had roles that are similar to yours, where you're supposed to pivot or make a big yep. change.
Yep.
And I actually put a calendar on my wall that the team could see. And every time there was a tiniest little change with somebody internally saying the right word, understanding SEO, whatever it was, we literally wrote it on the calendar, no matter how minor.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that way people could see progress.
Yeah,
you know, we got to celebrate the tiniest, you know, that person that you thought would never be supportive of your program and on a call finally was, oh, that went on board, you know, went on the calendar.
Yeah. That's amazing. And again, I think like you're saying, it really helps motivate people and helps marketing understand the impact that they're having. And I think that's really, really important. And I do think that, again, everybody's going to look at marketing's impact and results differently. Like you're saying, an engineer is going to totally look at it differently than the sales team or the CEO, or somebody in product. So you have to understand, you know, what that looks like. And like you're saying, those small victories are so, so important. Like the fact that engineering literally got what marketing does and recognized how they could help us by giving us customer data 10 years back. Truly
and
amazing.
You're still excited about it now.
I know. Right? That's the great thing about it.
It's a calendar mode. I'm telling you.
I'm going to write it on the calendar. Exactly.
Well, this has been an awesome interview. So we have a couple standard questions we ask everybody, and I just want to make sure I cover those. So, one is that we're very focused on what makes our customers tick. And just wondering if you had an aha moment about your customers recently or about your internal team, something that surprised you.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. First off, I focus mostly on B2B, so large, you know, enterprise solutions. And one thing I learned early on was just stay away from bespoke and customization. Literally no company is that unique that it needs to have its own specific solution developed. You know, try to get to a point where 80% of what you're doing is what is needed for the company, and then maybe 20% is sort of what they want. And I think that's really important for marketing to understand, for sales to understand, for customer success to understand, and clearly for product to understand. The other thing that I think is important to understand is we are the ones who built that product because we saw a need and a gap, right? And so we know that this is good stuff, best practices. And so we need to help our customers understand, like, this is the best practice. There was a gap, we filled it, and this is what you need to be implementing and why and what it's going to do for you. That said, I also think it's really important to really observe how the customers are using your products, because there's opportunities to pivot or enhance based on how they're using it. There might be times where you say, I'm not saying you tell your customer they're using it wrong, but you can say, you know, that wasn't the intention, and that's why it's not necessarily working for you in that context. And again, sort of help them understand best practices and, you know, use cases. But also, you know, they might be coming up with like new and innovative ways of using your product that you never even thought of. And it's a simple extension and could potentially fit into the go-to-market strategy. And therefore, you should be paying attention to that.
Yeah, I was actually head of marketing and sales for a SaaS product, and we saw that everybody had this need for like a statewide solution. And I actually pushed product to develop a statewide solution. And it's part of the reason we became the market leader was because we had that solution.
Exactly. Because you know? Your customers, they're telling you like, okay, yes, I bought it for this and this is how we're using it. But if we could do this on top of that, that would be amazing. Actually, it's interesting with Marketo. Like I said, I was an alpha and beta tester for them. And when it first started out, it was very, again, very product oriented. You know, the CEO was very much focused on the product and you know how it was built, but it was not usable by marketers. And his whole thing was like, this is a tool for marketers. It's so easy, marketers could use it. Thanks. but honestly, it wasn't easy to use. You literally needed to have an engineer develop it for you. And that was the feedback I gave him, was like, this, I can't use it, and I'm smart, and I'm actually tech savvy, and it's not usable unless I have a developer with me. And so they literally took it off the shelf, went back, and spent a year redeveloping it so that marketing people could actually use it. You know, and so that was, you know, it was a tense conversation I had with him, but you know, he took that information and then literally rebuilt the product so that, that it was easier for marketing people to use, because again, it was built by engineers and product teams, not by marketing. And so things like, you know, drag and drop, or I want to be able to, you know, segment my email list, were things that they hadn't even thought of because they weren't marketing folks per se. So, so really important to listen to the customers.
Amazing. Okay. So there's also, the other couple of questions we ask folks is, what is the win or resource that you want to share with the audience today?
Yeah. So I would love to share my book. Yeah, so the book is coming out in August, so it'll be a little while. I have an online course coming out that complements that in a couple of weeks, that will really help people walk through that journey. So those are the resources in terms of some of the stuff I talked about today. But I think that there are so many fascinating you know, articles and books that have come out, especially in the past year. You know, folks like David Miriam Scott, who wrote Finocracy. That's a great book because it talks about how to turn your customers into fans. Angela Duckworth with her grit, she, you know, it's not specific to marketing. It's just like grit, how to have grit. And she talks about how to measure grit. Those are some really interesting articles. I'm a big fan of Guy Kawasaki and all the different things he's talked about and, you know, how he came to be and what he's sort of focused on now. It's always really interesting. Rand Fishkin started his new Spark Toro solution, which is really interesting as well. And, you know, again, it's hard to say like one specific resource because I think marketing changes so quickly. Technology changes quickly. All the digital marketing tools changes really quickly. And so it's just really important to sort of stay on top, you know, listen to podcasts like this and see what's happening on LinkedIn and other social media channels to just make sure you're on top of things. Like I said, you know, the latest is oh my gosh, I've totally forgotten the name of it already, talked about at the beginning. The new social media app that you have to be invited to right now, the new TikTok, you know, we'll see what happens and what comes of that. But you need to understand sort of what technology is coming out there, and the different tools that may or may not impact, what it is that you're doing.
Great. So, how can our listeners learn more about you?
So they can go to my website, which is christinadelvillar.com. And also, you know, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I'll be posting a lot of articles there. Those are really the two best ways to reach out to me. It's LinkedIn and my website.
Great. Thank you very much for your time today.
This is awesome. It's great. It's good. I'm excited. So hopefully that was helpful for folks.
Oh, I think it totally is. And personally, I really enjoyed it, as you can tell.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's good. I'm excited.
Thanks so much for listening.
To find out more about our podcast and what we are up to, go to digitalmarketingvictories.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please, if you like what you hear, spread the word. Rate us, comment, and share.
We're always looking for new topics, ideas, and guests. So if you have suggestions, please go to our website or email us at questions@digitalmarketingvictories.com.
And thanks for listening.